Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network, with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I'll be your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs every first and third Sunday of every month. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. And I think that's really important to learn because brain injury happens so often and so quickly that you don't even, there's no preparation time for it. So on Another Fork in the Road, I want to raise awareness of traumatic brain injury, and I want to help others to understand what survivors and caregivers are experiencing, to let them know that survivors can accomplish, and they can do a lot. On previous shows, I told of my husband David's and my journey through the TBI maze. That's what I call it. It's a maze. You never know where you're going, and you can get lost in there too sometimes. So, but if you missed those shows, and they were a long time ago, you can find them in the archives at On Demand, and that's at blogtalkradio.com/Brain Injury Radio. Or easier, you can just type in Fugerski in my blog. And this is the time that I always remember to say, have a pencil and paper available so that you can take notes. And I always pass out URLs that you might want to check into after the show. And, so you'll be able to jot them down. Just like me, I just came over here with my notepad and a pencil that has no point. So I can't even jot down anything. So I'm not even taking my own good advice. But anyway, so go to my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. It's all one word. It's all lowercase. And on the right sidebar, find where it says On the Air Show Menu. There's another topic. It's a topic there called On the Air, but you want the show menu. On the Air Show Menu, and you will find, I don't even have a clue how many shows I've done. Maybe 100 or more. I'm not sure. Maybe more than that. I don't know. But on subsequent shows, I interview traumatic brain injury survivors and caregivers. I delve into their journeys to see how they traverse their world of TBI, because every brain injury is different. Everyone's there is like a fingerprint or like a snowflake. And there are no two alike. So every survivor, and because of the survivor's brain injury is different, the caregiver's journey is also different. So on some shows, I have guests, such as therapists and other medical professionals, and there'll be discussions of pertinent topics related to TBI, for example, depression or fatigue, anger management, and flooding, to name a few. Flooding is not the flooding that we're getting here in Santa Cruz and around the Central Valley, Central Northern Santa Cruz, where we're having the atmospheric storms. That flooding is with real water. But flooding is similar to that in the fact that you're just overwhelmed all of a sudden with all kinds of different sensory overloads, light, sound, too many people, whatever. But that's the kind of flooding I'm talking about. So anyhow, so we talk about all those kinds of things. So I hope that you're going to find my show tonight fun and informative. informative, and I hope that you'll visit the shows of other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio Network. And there are shows every night from 5:30 p.m. to – nope, sorry, I'm lying to you. There are shows every night from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific. And there are and then on the weekends, we have shows from 5:30 to 10 p.m. Pacific time. So you can just do your time conversion across the United States or anywhere else in the world, because the Brain Injury Radio airs across every single state in the United States and in 36 different countries. So now sit back, relax, and enjoy the show for tonight. So let's look at what we're going to be talking about today. Today is actually a guest day, but it's kind of gotten all sort of, you know, kind of messed up in the past from the transition from the old year to the new year. So we're having a panel of two. Don Corbelli and I have gotten together to, we're going to just talk about it today. We're going to talk about whatever comes up. And there'll be a couple things that I want to press on, but pretty much it's going to be a free-for-all show, and those are always so much fun to have. So let me just tell you a little bit about Dawn Corbelli before we get started, and then I'll let her tell you a little bit more about her, and then we'll just talk, and you can be like a fly on the wall, you know. And if you want to call in, call in. I would be happy to have people call in today. I don't usually do that, but if you do want to call in, the number is 844-200. Nope, that's not it. Forget that number. It's 424-243-9540. So give it a try, folks. Anyhow. Don Corbelli is the author of A Miracle a Day, One Day at a Time, Hope After Traumatic Brain Injury. So you might want to pick up her book and read her complete story. But we're going to give you little smidges of it today. So Don and her daughter, Veronica, are both survivors of the same near-fatal car accident. And Don shared her and her daughter's stories of recovery on a constant recovery, I should say, because there's never really a full recovery on brain injury. You're always in the process. So I should say her process of recovery on Another Fork in the Road on the Brain Injury Radio Network on January 16, 2022. So that is almost exactly 1 year ago. It's actually 1 year ago for this show for that. So that's interesting, very apropos. But so you can go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, and then again in the right sidebar, it's the easiest way to do to get to a show like this is to type Dawn's last name or her first, because I don't have too many Dawns on my blog. But it's Corbelli. So type that into the sidebar, and you will see Dawn's story that will come up on 1/17, 2022. And the thing is, what was I going to say there? Dawn's also been a panelist on several shows last year. So her name will also show up in the panel on the air show menus. So if you ever want to go listen to more of Dawn's thoughts about whatever we were talking about that night, you can also follow through the same way just by putting her last name, Corbelli, into the search box. So today, Dawn and I are going to catch up on the past year since she was on the show for her own interview and see what we can look forward to in the new year. And we're going to talk about whatever comes up. So sit back and, like I said, be that fly on the wall. And if you have any questions for Dawn or me, just give us a call, and I'll give you that number again. It is, yes, 424-243-9540. Okay, hope you have that pencil. All right, so let me just say hi, Dawn. How are you?
Hi, Donna. I'm really good. Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Oh, thanks. I'm so glad you came on. It was, you know, it's always fun to talk with you. We have such good conversations. And I think when you said before is that we're both talkers, so we'll just do fine. So it's, yeah, we're going to just have a chat. We're going to pretend, folks, that we are in a coffee shop. I actually just got, a prize. You know, one of those things where you put a ticket in the big jar and they pull out your name. So I just got a $25 gift certificate to Pete's Coffee. It's P-E-E-T-S Coffee Shop up where in Santa Cruz. So we're going to just pretend we're sitting there. I haven't been there yet, but we'll pretend we're sitting in Pete's Coffee Shop, or you can be Starbucks Coffee Shop, or you can be in your living room. It doesn't make any difference. But hang out with us and listen in to what we have to say. So how is your new year going, Dawn?
My new year's is going really well, but I had a happening this last week that surprised me very much. You know how brain injury is, and sometimes our temper can be really bad. And I am on a medication that keeps me from snapping very quickly. You know when something upsets you and you just snap.
Yeah.
But I am on medicine for that, but it didn't work. I was in a...
Oh, no.
I know. It's very regrettable. I was in a grocery store pharmacy, and I was... I asked this lady, the only one in line, I asked her if she was in line because I couldn't tell, and she said yes, and I got behind her. And as I was standing there for a while, I was looking around, and I looked up, and the sign in front of us said consultation, but I knew around the corner it said pickup. So I got out of line and I stood, there was already somebody at the pickup window, and I stood behind her. Well, the lady behind the desk said, next person please, and I stepped forward. Well, the lady in line said, I told you I was in line, and I'm next. And I stopped and I looked at the sign and I pointed to it and I said, but that sign says consultation and this one says pickup and I'm here to pick up. And I just didn't understand. It was one line for no matter what you needed.
Oh.
And I didn't know that. Well, she came forward at me and she said, don't tell me you don't know. And I got very offended by that because I wasn't trying to do anything wrong. And I started yelling in the grocery store. And I looked to my left, and by then there was a lot of people in line. And then I yelled at the lady, I told you I didn't know. I've never been to this pharmacy before, you, and I called her a name.
Oh, dear.
you can fill it in.
Yeah.
And I turned around and I walked out of the store and I never got my prescriptions that day.
Oh,
well,
no.
Afterwards I was shaking. You know, I had been so upset, but then also I felt like a horrible person. But I talked to my old neuropsychologist and he said, Dawn, there's a big difference between being a bad person and doing something wrong. He said, I want you to write down on a paper all the good things about yourself. You are not a bad person. And that made me feel a lot better because I'm not a bad person, but I did sure feel bad for what I did.
Yeah, but you
didn't even do it
on purpose, Dawn. Yeah, but you know what? You didn't even do it on purpose. You know, that was the thing.
I didn't.
So you didn't understand. And I think anybody could have had that same thing. I could have gone into the store and not realized it was one line. You know, if it's not really designated, you know, but oftentimes when you do, you can kind of, you know, see that there's people are feeding in if there are other people in front of you. But if she was the only one, then I don't think you were in the wrong. I think it was a misunderstanding.
Well, the thing I did wrong was that I called her a name, and I yelled inappropriately in a store.
Yeah, I can understand that you're upset about that, because I would be too. And, you know, and when you said you were shaking, I understand that, because when you have a confrontation with somebody, that's exactly what will happen to me, because I am not a confrontational person. I don't like that feeling. But sometimes you're driven to it. And,
right.
And then you just feel like you're just shaking inside, because it's not how you really want to be. And, you know, the thing is, you can't take all the blame there, which I think you were doing, because I think she could have been more understanding too. You know, when you said I
didn't
do it on
purpose,
you know. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, she could have been a little more understanding. And, you know, we're adults at this point. You know, you kind of, sometimes that happens when people just walk in front of you or do something, you know, and you can get upset about it because, oh, well, let it go, you know. In school with my six-year-olds, they would say, no, I'm first. I am supposed to be there, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, just you can talk about it, I guess. That would be the best thing, I suppose, to do. But I liked what your neuropsychologist said about writing down the good things about you. And this is a lesson that's really very important for everybody, is that, you know, we all do things that, you know, what aren't stellar. Let's put it that way. We don't always do exactly what's right, even though we would like to. And so when you have that mistake there and that happened to you and you're feeling that way, you got to get some way to get out of it. And I think what he told you or she told you was a good thing. You know, think about the positive. And I think that works for almost anything. Always try to go for the positive as opposed to the negative in anything in life, because it's going to make you happier if you dwell on the negative. You know, so I think that's a very interesting story with a huge moral lesson in it.
Thank you.
So did you write all the stuff down that's great about you?
I didn't because I know I try and be a good person, so I didn't literally make a list, but it made me feel so much more validated, because first thing I said to him was, I'm a horrible person, and that's not really true either.
No, of course not. I think most people in the world aren't horrible people. They might do some, you know, not so nice things sometimes. But I think even, you know, just making a, from what I'm understanding how you're saying this, that it was purely by accident anyhow that this whole incident happened. And, you know, it's too bad. It's too bad because, you know, and people don't understand why it happened too. You know, and that gives a little more justification for it. It's not, you know, not that you can go around acting that way in normal life and get away with something. But people understand, it makes it a little bit easier to take. And maybe that would have been a good learning time for that woman if you were able to have explained, I'm sorry, this is what has happened to me, and I really didn't get it, and I apologize. And, you know, maybe then she could have gotten the message.
I wasn't thinking that far ahead. No.
In the when it's happening, you don't.
And then my neuropsychologist said, because I told him, oh, now I have to go back and pick up my medicine another day. And I said, oh, gosh, you know, I kind of don't want to do that. And he said, when you do, I want you to hold your head high and don't feel bad. You hold your head high, and if somebody says something to you about what you had done, just tell them, I didn't handle that very well, did I?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
but
by owning
he didn't want me
it,
to be ashamed.
By owning it, you're taking responsibility for it, and then, you know, you've got control. When that happens, you're controlling the situation, because you're not letting anybody else put you down if you go in, or even if you were to apologize, if you know, if you recognize the people behind the counter that may have seen this the incident, and just say, I really apologize. It just overtook me, and I couldn't, whatever. But you know what I mean?
Yes.
Just I mean, or ignore it. The other thing is ignore it. It's gone. It's done.
Right.
All those people that were there are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and
start
I was
over.
Actually I was actually laughing at night, though. I said, holy cow,
mm-hmm.
all those people in line are going to go home and say, I really saw a scene in the store today.
You put on a one-person act on a grocery floor stage.
Yeah.
So good. It gives them something to talk about. People need that.
Yeah.
So and it means nothing to them anyhow. It's more happening to you, and that woman has probably already gone on with her life. She's not thinking about that anymore. And everybody
right.
has incidents like that. And where you just lose control, or you say something you don't mean to say, or whatever. But you know what? You wake up the next day and it's gone.
Yes.
You start over.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was an interesting story. And I thanks for sharing that, because I think it gives people some input into what kind of things they can do when something like that happens. It kind of took you by surprise. You didn't go in there thinking this was going to happen, and it just automatically went, whoa, out of control. And then it's over.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry that happened to you, though.
That's okay. Do you have any interesting stories that have happened since the New Year's?
Oh, no, just the one I told you before.
Oh, okay,
before the studio went live.
No other ones.
I think I'm going to let that story sit with you. No other
story. Of course.
Yeah, I'm
sorry. Of course, I actually wasn't even thinking about that. I just thought maybe you had something interesting happen since the New Year, maybe along the lines of maybe your husband had a problem with something and, I don't know.
Yeah.
A brain injury.
Everything's pretty much status. Oh, no, he never does. He's very calm about everything, yeah. I know. Well, that's the difference in the brain injuries. He doesn't have any cognitive, emotional, or behavioral type things, anything in the frontal lobe that can cause problems like that, but he has all the physical disabilities. So that's what I'm saying. Brain injuries are all different. So he's not dealing with emotional problems where some other people do have that, or behavioral type problems that they're dealing with because the brain injury imposed that on them because of where the brain injury happened in the brain. And usually a lot of that is if you had frontal lobe issues, if you had your frontal lobe damaged, well, that houses your emotional area, your executive function. Your executive function meaning, are you able to discern different things that might be important or not? My one example of this is one that was explained to me by a friend of mine who had a brain injury and has his executive function is severely damaged, and he couldn't make logical decisions. Like he would be outside with his grandchild and get really concerned because the grandchild was in the street when the child wasn't anywhere near the street. So these are the kinds of things that can happen with a frontal lobe, with frontal lobe damage or anger or things like that, or the rage or whatever comes out. There are so many things, and it just goes on and on. And I didn't prep for that kind of stuff, but
impulsivity comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My daughter
absolutely
had a boyfriend, and she got a tattoo on her finger, and so did he, 1 week after they started going out last year. And, of course, they're not together now. And she says, I don't want that on my finger anymore. I said, I guess you're going to have to live with it because
What
yeah.
are you going to do? I know. It doesn't come off.
So I'm
where
hoping
does,
it taught her a lesson.
Finger,
don't get a tattoo with
yeah.
somebody after a week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, that's, but you just think, you know, oh, it's going to be forever, you know. And, I mean, how many times do people get tattooed something on their arm or their shoulder, their other partner, you know, and then they
mm-hmm.
divorce, you know. So now you've got David on your shoulder, and you're married
right.
now to Rick. how do you get away with that? So, yeah, I stick with maybe generic things if you're going to do a tattoo that you don't
yeah.
have to explain away. But,
she looks at that
every time and has – I was just like, she's going to look at that and be reminded about this person that she really doesn't want to be reminded of.
Right.
At the time.
But she's
yeah.
so impulsive, like she can't see – the consequences of the things that she does.
Mm-hmm.
She just knows what she wants
right.
to do or what she wants, but she's
mm-hmm.
unable to see what is going to happen about this.
Yeah. What happens down the road when,
mm-hmm.
yeah, especially something like a tattoo, you know, because you can't easily get rid of them.
Right. Oh, she was looking
into... I guess there is a process, but...
She was looking into having it lasered off today, and I said no, because a little tiny tattoo takes, it was $1,200 to have it removed. I said,
oh,
no way.
Oh, my gosh.
You're going to live with it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, $1,200. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, where is it on her hand? Maybe she can cover it up with a ring or.
That's exactly what she wants to do. She wants to get a little ring that it has the colors from a unicorn or something. She loves unicorns, and she's going to mm-hmm. wear it on her front finger, first finger, where it is. So that was her solution,
uh-huh.
too. Yeah, that's
okay.
a good idea.
You know, and they have those really long rings. They're silvery, and they're very long. They're like about an inch long. So that would
yes.
take care of something like that, too. If you know what I'm talking about? I think I've had one at one point. So something like that, at least that's a solution that she doesn't have to show it to the world. She has still
right.
to live
right.
with it. But just keep the ring on forever.
That's right.
You know? But there is a solution, you know. Not necessarily the best one, but possible that works.
I think that's a good one. I'm going to share it with her.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, so at least she didn't put it somewhere where she couldn't hide it. You know?
Right.
So what kind of a tattoo did you get? I'm just curious now.
Well, she has a Q and a heart on her finger, so the Queen of Hearts. And then he
oh.
got a K with a heart for
and
the King of Hearts.
Oh. Well, it sounds
mm-hmm.
cute.
He got several tattoos with him. So.
Oh, really? Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
She likes tattoos, and she just, if she's, he didn't understand her brain injury, and they were together for 9 months,
mm-hmm.
and he still told her, it was me. I'm the one with the problem. He didn't understand. He would always say, you don't have a brain injury. And, but she did. She does.
Uh-huh. So he was enabling her to do things, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we're sitting here, Dawn, talking to the world and letting people know that these are the kinds of things that happen because people don't understand it. And we're hoping
mm-hmm.
that maybe, you know, that people will understand some of these things that, you know, brain injury... People, you know, it's invisible. Like what you're talking about is invisible. Her impulsivity. Nobody understands what the impulsivity is. You know, it's there, but they don't understand how it might affect somebody's life. You know,
right.
The same thing with like sound and light sensory overload. you know, that kind of thing. Nobody gets that. You know, somebody gets
very upset
or, you know, okay, not so there,
like,
you know, blurred. Go ahead.
That happens to me. And it's been almost 15 years, and I get sensory overload. It's really hard for me.
Yeah.
To go in loud places, all the noise, and if it's really weird. I can sit next to my daughter, and she'll be on her phone, and she'll be scrolling, and she scrolls really fast. Or we can be looking at the TV, and my husband or Veronica will just change like on guide, just change it really fast, and so it's rolling. That drives me up a wall, and I can't even look. It makes me crazy.
Yeah.
I can't keep up is the thing.
Yeah, heard of that. And just all that visual thing happening in front of you is just like a wave of light and different colors and sound going through. Yeah, I can understand that. I probably wouldn't have understood it before I started to study all the brain injury stuff, but sensory problems like that are horrible, and they can just, you know, they make you want to crawl inside yourself, I think.
Yes.
You just need to escape it. Yeah.
You got it.
I have a friend here when I first met her. This is an interesting story, and I know I've told it on the radio, but but somebody else will hear it. But I met this woman. Let's go back a story. I had written a story, and it was in an anthology. So it was published some years ago, quite a few years ago. And when we all met together, the person that the author that compiled everything and put it together had as many of us as could be meet on a Zoom meeting. And so we could see each other and everything. And one of the things that she had us do was to talk, you know, say who we were, of course, and a little bit about us and where we live. Well, we're going through this, and this one woman says, and I live in, and I'm going, holy moly, she lives 5 miles from me. And I was, you know, all excited, because I'm always excited in the brain injury community. I'm always excited, whether it be a caregiver or a survivor. She was a survivor, and she had written her story for this book, and I had. And, of course, we immediately connected and said, we have to go to lunch. We have to go. We have to meet each other. And so we made plans to do it, and I chose the restaurant. And then I realized, I mean, it was a nice, a pizza restaurant. It was a nice restaurant, but it was loud. And I remembered, oh, my God, you could barely hear each other in there. Why would I choose something? First off, why would I choose something? Forget brain injury. When I'm going to meet somebody brand new and I want to talk to them and I'm going to have to, you know, struggle to hear and they're going to have to struggle to hear. First off, that made no sense. But the reality of it was he wasn't going to be able to be in that place. And I knew that because of what we had talked about after that meeting of the authors. And so I called her back and I said, let's change this out and go to something quiet. I don't remember where we went, but it was to a quiet place so we could sit and chat and not have all this extra stuff going on. Well, then the story goes on to know that, you know, her husband, who is her caregiver, and I, who is M. David's caregiver, all started meeting together at restaurants to have lunch or dinner together. And this one time we were in a place, and it wasn't crowded. It was at lunchtime, and it wasn't crowded. But there were a few people around, and there was a person behind me that was talking quite loudly. And I could see this woman looking up constantly and getting agitated. And then there was a baby tapping on the table, you know how they pound on the tables and things and cry and things like that. And so, and I could see her getting more and more agitated. And I knew exactly what it was. You know, it was finally the man with the boisterous voice left, and so did the baby, and everything calmed down again. But I could see the panicky look on her face. Because what was happening is she was experiencing sensory overload. And she was, you know, wanting to crawl inside, you know, just to get away from it. But she was, you know, being polite and staying at the table and all that kind of stuff. But had it gone on longer, I don't think she would have been able to stay, you know, and she would have said something too, you know. So, yeah, so people don't see those kinds of things. Those are the kinds of things that we call invisible. Now, David doesn't have that kind of magnitude of this, of sensory overload or being with too many people and all that. But I know that, like, especially when we just went through the holiday season. So we always, you know, visit family. We're invited to several different homes and for the Christmas holiday and for Christmas Eve and not to and Thanksgiving too. So all three holidays that, number one, we have to travel an hour to get to and an hour back. And then we're there for about 3 or 4 hours, which is about the top limit. And even that's, you know, that's a lot. And he doesn't show it to anybody else, but I can see that we definitely need to get out of here now. But you also mm-hmm. have to be careful because you don't want to be rude. You know, you can't just have dinner if the dinner is late and run. So you have to be careful of that too. But we do, you know, we do make sure that we leave on time. And I can see his visual relief when we get into the car because now it's just the two of us and it's quieter. And not to say that it's overly loud. It's just that a lot of people are talking to each other, and that requires David to talk to them, which is a lot of work. It's a hard mm-hmm. job for him to talk because he has a speech problem with that, and he also will bite his mouth on the inside or his lips when he's talking because of his paralyzed right side. So he doesn't have control over that. So if he's not concentrating on not biting it, he'll be talking to somebody in a normal way and he'll chomp down on his lip or his inside of his or his tongue, you know, and that hurts. So everything is really hard. So just being there, not just the normal time of being there, but being there and having to be so aware constantly, so alert of everything that he's doing is exhausting. So mm-hmm. by the time he gets home, he's done. He's done. I bet you can understand some of that too.
I do, and this is so weird. I wear hearing aids, and when I uh-huh. take them out, it's everything seems very quiet after having them in all day. And when I'm overwhelmed yeah. like that, and I get home, I take my hearing aids out. And it brings
that's
the level
smart.
Of noise down greatly. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, it's that brings a story to my mind, too. When I was a child, I don't remember how old, but I'm going to say about fourth or fifth grade. I was still in elementary school, so it was below eighth grade. I had to go to the doctor to have my ears tested. And they did the cleaning of the ears. Well, apparently my ears were impacted with wax. And the doctor got it out, very painfully got it out. And I came out of that his office, and I remember saying to my mother, why did everybody turn up the noise in the cars? You know, the horns were louder, the cars were louder. So obviously my hearing was impacted by the buildup that had been in my ears or for whatever reason. I've only had it done that one time, but for whatever reason it happened, I just came into this world of noise, really, really loud noise, mm-hmm. you know, and she says, nothing's changed, Donna. Nothing's changed. I said, well, it sounds different to me. And I like the quiet. That's, you know, even now, I like the quiet. David and I don't have a television, so we never have a television, you know, in a different room going on, or we don't have the radio. So our house is really quiet. David is working on his computer, and if he is going to listen to a video or watch a TED Talk, he'll put on his earphones. If I need to have my computer on and making noise, I will put on headphones so that the other person doesn't have to experience the noise, especially, you know, the constant din of a television.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when I went to anytime we'd go to anybody's house, frankly, but I'm going to tell you about we go to my father-in-law's house, he would have the television on incessantly. Not that he was watching it necessarily, but it was on. And that noise was a constant din that actually it wore me out. You know, I just like, oh, if he was out of the room, I'd go turn the television off. And then he'd come back and he'd go back on. You know, and it's like, nobody's watching this. Why is it on?
Yes. My daughter likes the TV on a lot, and I'm home with her every day, and she takes naps. And I will turn the TV off immediately. I can go days without turning the TV on, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems like so many people want it just on all day.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah,
quiet,
I have,
I have neighbors.
I have neighbors that, I have neighbors
our
that
family.
Have it on all day. And I can hear it.
Yes. Our family. Okay. We're Italian, and we're loud.
Uh-huh.
And my older daughter's boyfriend has had 4 brain injuries, and he has to prepare himself to come over here for Sunday night dinner because the noise really overwhelms him. So they don't stay that long.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How does he deal with it? I mean, other than not staying long. Can he can handle it for some period of time? Or
he will, I used to think it was rude that he would be on his phone all the time, but that's how he diverts his attention, is by looking at his phone. And he gets his concentration somewhere else other than on us and the hustle bustle and the loud voices. So that's what he does. He looks at his phone all the time, and I just used to think it was rude, but now I totally understand. I never say anything about it.
That's good. Uh-huh. So he refocuses himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and puts his concentration on something else so he can ignore what's going on around him. That's a good strategy, actually. It's not an easy one to do, but if you can learn to do that and kind of, you know, but zone in, I guess. He's zoning into his own little space, and he's isolating himself. And the rest of the world can go on, and a bomb can go off, and he doesn't necessarily have to be exposed to it, that kind of thing. That's what I'm seeing is what he might be doing.
Yes.
Huh, interesting. Did you ever talk to him about doing that when you thought he was being rude?
I would ask him if he could put his phone aside, but as soon as my daughter explained to me what he was doing, I never said anything again.
That makes sense.
And they've been together for
again,
6 years, so it's been a long time since I've said anything about it.
Well, see, that's the awareness part. You didn't know. And so you responded in a normal manner not liking the rude behavior. But once you understood why, you were able to compensate for that, and it all worked out. And that's exactly what I'm talking about when I say we need to bring awareness to other people. Because when other people hear us, and I'm not talking about the people who are affected by brain injury, but I'm talking about people that maybe never even heard of brain injury, you know, but when they hear something like this, they might, you know, it might just make a spark and it'll click and say, oh, that's what so-and-so is doing, or that's why he's acting that way, or why she's doing what she's doing that I think is rude, you know, so it brings attention to it and it brings the awareness and it helps other people to understand the difference. You know, things that people are going through that you would have absolutely no clue about. Because, you know, tell you the truth, I would have thought that was rude, too. You know, you're not in somebody's home and visiting with them and then hanging out on the phone. So it's good to find out what's going on. So that was another good point there that you brought up, Dawn.
Well, thank you.
So let's... We're just racking him up here tonight.
See, we're doing pretty darn good talking. Just you and I.
I know. Are you kidding? I could talk this forever. And not everybody wants to talk to me about this always, you know, but I feel like it's so important, and you can learn so much every time you talk to somebody mm-hmm. about it. I mean, I already learned several things from you that I wasn't really aware of that would come up later on, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So let's talk. I wanted to hit into resolutions a little bit, and I know you're not big on resolutions, and actually, neither am I. But I think a lot of people do try for resolutions. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it happens. That's what we do on New Year's, you know, a new year, and you have to. Everyone says, "Oh, you've got to think about your life and what are you going to do to make it better?" And then everybody does it for about a week. And then mm-hmm. they're gone. They're out of there. You know, so that's
I don't want to set myself up for failure.
Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of people do. Okay, I'm going to go to the gym 3 days a week. And then reality sets in, and you don't have time to go to the gym once a week, let alone three times a week, unless you're really one of those exercise buffs. But if you're making a resolution to do that, you aren't one of the exercise buffs, you know. That's something that you're putting on yourself to do that you know you don't like, you don't want to do it, but you're going to say, resolve to do it and say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to lose 10 pounds in 2 months. And then when it's not happening, you're right. You've set yourself up for failure. You don't give yourself any happiness because of it. And so I think it's, you know, not necessarily a good thing to make resolutions. I would love to have a survey of how many people made resolutions and followed through and how many didn't. I think that would be an interesting survey. Somebody should do that. Maybe they have. Let's think about, okay, go ahead, what?
So many people make resolutions about changing themselves. I think
uh-huh.
some resolutions are okay, but if it's about your looks, it's going to make you have lower self-esteem if you don't do what you had said you were going to do.
Exactly. And so, you know, you're setting yourself up for failure, as you've said before. But I think one thing that would be interesting is not necessarily making resolutions, but looking back at the old year and seeing what you did that you accomplished, looking at your accomplishments. I think that would be a better thing. In fact, somebody wrote on, I don't remember, Twitter, Facebook, something, some social media thing that I was reading, and I think I kept it because she said, and I think this is an interesting thing, too, because she said she felt like she hadn't accomplished much that year. And so when you think about that, you say, oh, geez, the whole year went by, and I don't feel like I did as much as I should have. Or maybe I should have done this and gone this direction or whatever. And then she started to write down all the things that she had accomplished. And she amazed herself. Because she said, holy geez, I didn't realize I did this. So I decided to do the same thing. I did it for a different reason because my publisher asks us every time we do an event to write out an event form, an author event form, or an author media form, and send it to them so that they can get us publicizing. And or whatever, or let Amazon know or whatever about the books and things like that. So I had just done two events in December, which is a lot, you know, when you think about it already. I had done two events that I just did and didn't think anything about them. That was it. I did them. They're over. They're gone. Well, I had to write them up for him. So I did that, and I sent it to him, which made me think about, well, do I have anything else that I should send to him? So I went back through my year, and I'm not sure I got the complete year, But I went back through it, and I saw from January of 2022 till December of 2022, I had done 16 events with my book. And that doesn't count the radio or blog posts. Yes, 16.
Wow.
I had video podcasts. I had interviews. I had articles published in magazines. I had 16, and I was shocked. I really am. I'm not just saying that. I was shocked. I said, I went back to David. I said, that's more than one a month, David. When did I do all this stuff? But, of course, it's all in my file. And I just, thank you. It's like, it's all in my file. And I just went down and said, oh, my gosh, yes, I did do that. I drove an hour and a half to a library to give a talk. I did a, I don't even remember what they are, Dawn. I'd have to open up that file to go look again. But it's like, holy geez, that's pretty. Oh, wait, here, I am going to open up the file and look. See if I can see what it says for prisoners. This, I'm talking about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. Let's see, events. Events for prisoners for 22. Yep, there they are, sitting right there. Okay, my book was at a conference. I wasn't there, but my book was at a conference. I did a talk in my community here. I did a magazine article for this place, another one for this place, an interview with an Australian podcaster, another article here. A great article. Oh, with Bree Allison. You know Bree, because that's where I got this one. The Power of the Patient, you did that one too.
Oh, I did do that. You did that too?
Yes, you did. I did.
I need to look it up.
Yeah, I did it. I'm two after you, I think. Yeah, when I saw yours, I said, that's really a good interview. So I contacted Bree and I said, would you like to interview me? She said, I would. So, yeah. So I was like, holy moly, this is really cool. So anyhow, yeah, I was like,
thank
stop.
You.
I was the year before. Yeah.
Thank you for watching mine.
I am
going to look yours up for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was so complimented.
Definitely do
Did
that.
You know that they're known by the National Library of Medicine? This is a big deal for them to get your interview.
I know. I was, like, so excited because I saw yours, and it was so professionally done. And I thought, okay, I want to do this, too. So I contacted Dawn, and within 2 weeks, I was being interviewed. And it's, I think it was a 59-minute interview. So, yeah, they used everything I did. So I was really happy.
Right.
So, and that's another good thing. You know, it's piggybacking on each other. If I hadn't known you, I wouldn't have seen that interview, you know? And what did I do? I think, I don't know how I even got to meet you, but something you wrote on Facebook drew me in. I contacted you. We talked. We had interaction between the radio show here. And so it's just connections, you know? So it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying to go back. Not to expound on what I did, but to go back and to look at what you've done instead of thinking about, what can I do, you know, what can I make from my resolution? You know, now I can say, I have to surpass 16 events. Well, that's not logical. It's not realistic. I mean, it's possible it could, but why put that pressure?
If you would have planned those 16 events, you might have been so overwhelmed to think about, because that's a lot of events. You might have actually, if it was me, I would likely be overwhelmed to think about doing them all year. I do what you do. I actually looked back, too, and I wrote down the different things that I did. I didn't do 16 of them. But I'm very happy with what I did do, and it's led me to make a couple goals for this year.
Uh-huh.
I
know
in the
that
magazine.
You and Veronica go to – oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's – and you just – I don't know. You know, it's just what you do. But what you do, I'd like to do, too. You make the school visits.
Did you say the school visits?
Yeah, the school visits. You and Veronica go to the schools and talk.
Yes, we do. We certainly do. It's our
and
second year doing
marvelous.
It.
And I think that's marvelous.
Thank you.
I think that's marvelous.
We like it.
And where best? Where best to talk? You know, to kids who are listening to you because they're fascinated by this. It doesn't, you know.
And
it's
Veronica was 15 at the time. And we have
yeah.
a slideshow that we put on there. And we do put the picture on there of her in the ICU because
uh-huh.
they're 15 to 18 years old. And she was 15
uh-huh.
years old. So some of the things we tell them that others might think, oh, my gosh, that was so inappropriate, or why did she do that? Well,
yeah.
because of her brain injury, and this could happen to you. We want you to be careful. Or if you ever meet somebody
yeah.
and they're behaving in a way that you don't understand, and teenagers would often look at them and say, oh, that's weird, I ask them, please, not to do that. Keep in mind, you know, have an
uh-huh.
open mind that you don't know
yeah.
somebody else's story. So.
And that's so very
yep.
true. That is so very true. And so, and I think you're hitting the perfect age for bringing awareness of brain injury because these are kids who are intelligent, but they're not come to full maturity. So they're not really thinking always in the right direction.
Right.
They, you know, they're more daredevilish. They'll do things that if you were had a more mature brain, a more, you probably wouldn't do. You know, you would
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't lay on the railroad tracks if you were maybe 25 or 30. But a 15-year-old might think that that's okay. That kind of stuff. I mean, I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about really ridiculous things. You know. And they don't think about it because they're with their friends and they're just having fun and they're just doing, and then somebody gets hurt somehow. And then
right.
you've got that on, you know, not only the person has to deal with it, but the friends do too. So by bringing this information to them, Dawn, I think that you're making what they don't know a reality, that it's a possibility, and maybe make them think twice about doing something. And, of course, in your situation where you and Veronica were in a car accident, obviously that was unavoidable. But sometimes teenagers are doing things in cars that are avoidable. You know, speed racing down the street with somebody else. Yeah, cell phones, texting. Yes, exactly. You know, oh, I can just text here. Well, I always watch a movie and I get so annoyed every time I see it. Anytime I see a movie like this, where the two characters are driving in this car, you know, and the driver looks over for about 30 seconds or something and talking
yes.
to the other person. It's like, hello, you can't take
right.
your eyes
watch
off
the road.
For half a second. Yeah. You know, and you're saying, well, yeah, you know, we know that you're sitting in a you know, a stationary car. You know, and you've got scenery going by you, but you're sitting in it. So you can do that because you're not. But I've tried it. I've done it just for the, you know, the thing. Look away just for a sec, you know, for 2 seconds. And that's a long time. I only
mm-hmm.
do it when the road is totally empty, you know, just to see, because I'm like, how are they, you know, even if you overlook over there for 3 or 4 seconds or 5 seconds, I'm doing it now, actually. And it's like looking down the hallway. Okay. But I can't see what's in front of me. And what if somebody stops? Or what if somebody runs out? Or whatever. And yet they
mm-hmm.
do this. So I always think, you know, and teenagers are not thinking, they're thinking more like the TV things. I think that they can just do whatever
right.
they want, or put your head down and text, and then you look up and their car in front of you is stopped or whatever. You know, and it's like, oh, my God. So you're bringing a reality to their lives that sometimes they need to see. It might save, you know, may save them, may save a life.
Yeah.
So keep
well, thank
doing
you.
What you're doing. That's good. Yeah. So, all right. So
thank
we're
you.
Not, okay, let's go. Let's do one other thing on resolutions. If you are going to make a resolution, And we hope that you're not going to make the ones about losing weight and things like that that are almost impossible to do. But you can always assess your resolution, and you can always adjust it. You can change out. You don't have to keep to that. You haven't signed a contract on it. You know, it's something you chose for yourself. And if it's not working out, or if it's making you feel uncomfortable or dissatisfied or whatever, then move on. Do something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's really, so if you feel compelled to make a resolution, know that it can be changed. Basically, that's all I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else pressing on your end?
On my end? Change.
Yeah. Anything you want to
change?
Change, okay.
Okay. I didn't used to be like this, but now change is very hard for me. Like, let's see. There's construction on the road, and I have to go a different
mm-hmm.
way. I'm so uncomfortable
okay.
with that. It's change.
Yeah.
There's just, I'm trying to think of things, because I tell my daughter all the time, oh, I don't want to do this. It's different. It's different than it used
yeah.
to be. Just change is really hard
for
me.
And how did you, but it wasn't hard for you before the injury?
No.
I
used to be so spontaneous,
yeah.
and
uh-huh.
I mean, when you're spontaneous, there's lots of change.
Yes, absolutely.
But not now.
Okay, yeah, so now you prefer the status quo. You prefer to know what's happening in your life.
Yeah.
Without having to go and take that fork in the road or repath it or something. So that's interesting because, go ahead, you can what?
Oh, we went to an appointment. It was a counseling office, I think. It doesn't matter. It was an office. And
mm-hmm.
they moved offices, and I had been going to see them for a few years. It was actually my hearing aid doctor. And they went
uh-huh.
into a new office in a different part of town. And I was so upset. I was used
uh-huh.
to the old building. I knew exactly where to go. I knew how to get there. I knew how to get where I needed once I was in the building. And then they got in the new one, and it was change. I didn't see the address
yeah.
on the building where I wanted to. I didn't know where to go once I got inside. And I was, like, a little bit distraught over it. It really bothered
mm-hmm.
me. So something simple.
Yeah, I know. You know, and transition is another thing when you're going from one thing to the next. So I want to go back to change before I go into transition, though, because I find that with David, too. And he likes to know what's going on in his life. I'm not sure that this is something terribly new, but I know it seems emphasized to me now. I never thought about it before, his injury. You know, he would get himself, he had his routine. Everybody has a routine, I think, that we rely on. We don't necessarily think about it, though. But just think about, if you go in the shower, what do you do first? You know, once you get in the shower, you pick up your washcloth or your scrubby or whatever those little net things are called, scrunchies.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not scrunchies. Scrunchies are for your hair. But anyhow, and do you wash
loofahs.
Your right arm first, your left arm, your shoulder, your face? You know, what? What are they called?
They're called loofah. A loofah, those round, spongy things.
Okay. Yeah, so you know, everybody has something, but you don't think about it. And since David's brain injury, he has to plan out all of his activities like that. But he doesn't have to, you know, if once he has it planned out in his head and he knows, then he doesn't have to think about it so much. But he does have to go through the same routine. And it's interesting because I didn't realize that about him prior to his brain injury. But after the brain injury, it's like at night, I know exactly what his routine is going to be. He's going to get all his clothes out ready for the next day. He's going to do, you know, A, B, and C to be get ready for bed. He's, you know, and it's in the same thing in the morning. He's going to do this, this, and this. And then he has his day planned, like he knows what he's going to work on. Because David is my editor for all my books and all my writing. So if we're working on something right then, he knows that's what he's going to work on. He knows that he's going to be doing an email to a friend about a book that they read together or whatever. He has it all planned out. Not necessarily like it could be several different things and he can choose from that, but he has it all planned out. Here comes Donna and says, David, can you do this for me? He's usually pretty good about it. But it's funny because sometimes he'll just go like, I don't know, you know, he doesn't say anything, but I know, I can tell. And I'm going to say and give an example the other day, and I knew it was going to happen. So we were planning to go up to Santa Cruz from Arizona. And but we weren't planning to do it for about a week. And then my son called and said, Mom, I could really use your help watching the baby for this period of time. And I said to David, Jared wants us to come up a little earlier. And I found a flight for 2 days from now. And he, like, looked at me and I thought, oh, shoot. I knew I was in trouble. He's like, well, I can't do that. I have this and this planned, blah, blah, blah. But once he thought it through, once he had a few minutes to process it, and this is the kind of thing I'm saying with you, with what you were doing too, going to a new place, changing out. Once he had a time to process it, he was okay with it. But it was It was the thing like, you know, you can't mess with what's already there because that works. And when you throw in the wrench, it really puts a problem, causes a problem. And I'm not sure that would have happened beforehand. I think not. But I think because of the brain injury, he's comfortable in what he's in his space, in what he's doing, in his body, and what he's doing. He knows it's going to take him a long time to do something. You can't ask him to rush. I can't say to him today, in 2 hours, you want to go out to dinner. It's not going to work. Where it would have before, he would say, no. No, he might think about it a little bit and say, okay, yeah, let's go. But a lot of times he'll just say no. He'll say, how about if we go tomorrow or the next day? Because then it goes into the plan. You know, and so that's the kind of thing that, yours is a little bit different there, but it's rocking the boat. When your doctor's office changed, all your normalcy, all your comfort level got shifted. And that's what happens with David now, too. It got shifted. And then, you know, he'll adjust uncomfortable for a while. And,
right.
And people don't understand. That's another thing. People just don't get that. You know, if somebody asks him to do something and he's not comfortable with it, I'm pretty understanding of it. And I told him, I said, I usually just give you time because I know if you say no, it's, you know, you'll probably think about it and it'll come around. But don't push it. So I don't get upset. I don't get angry with it. You know, I don't say, oh, geez, come on, you know. It's like, okay, that's what he can do and that's what we'll do. And that's, you know, that takes a lot of years of learning, though, you know. Oh my gosh, I almost forgot. Jeez. Oh. Goodness, I should have played the happy birthday song on here tonight. Oh, I can't. It's not in this house. David just celebrated 18 years after traumatic brain injury on the 13th.
Wow.
Yeah. 18 years. And he wasn't supposed to live through the first operation or the next two. He was given a 1 in 600 chance of surviving his first subarachnoid hemorrhage. And he's here. So, yeah. So we celebrated. We had, I have to tell now, I I put a contest out on Facebook, and I have been too busy to go over and check everything out. But I asked her, I told everybody about it, and then I said, anybody who can guess what I made for dinner that was really special for David, I'll send them a PDF of my book. So I have to go back.
Oh.
But for, yeah, so somebody's going to win because somebody will win no matter what. But the first one I looked at said shrimp scampi. Well, I made scallop scampi. So if I can't, if somebody didn't come up with scallop scampi, then I'm going to give it to the shrimp person. Yeah, it was just fun. You know, I was just like, oh, my God, we have to celebrate. I'll give my book away to somebody. It's just a PDF, so it's easy. I don't have to go out and mail it. I don't have to do anything. I can just email it. And so, and that makes it good. You might want to think about that kind of thing for your book, too.
Have you given a lot of books away?
I have given some books away. I'm not going to say a lot. I gave about three away to my community up here. I'm going to give one to my community back home. Mostly not, but some PDFs I've given away. And, oh, this is another thing, Dawn, that you might be interested in. Well, this is something we'll talk about later. This is not for everybody. But, yeah, I think, you know, and the thing is with your book, you want reviews. That's the biggest thing. You want reviews so Amazon will recognize you. So ask for reviews. That's what I do. I'm asking for my publisher. Well, I told him, I said, all I want for Christmas is a review. And now my publisher does that for everything. He tells all our writers in the company, ask for the review. So I do. I ask for the review. I just got an amazing review from a person who just read my book, and it came in to me today. I don't think it's posted on Amazon yet. He said he posted it, but they usually take a day or two to get it up. So I got another amazing review, and I'm like, yay! All right, I'll do that. I'll put it on Facebook. It's really nice. I don't know how much of it he posted. I should put everything he wrote because everything he wrote was amazing. And it's like, oh, he got it. He really got it. You know, and the one
wonderful thing
that I always love is when people tell me, I was there with you. I was in the ambulance, you know. When they tell me that, then I know they've really gotten the book. So that was
why.
And he did. He said that.
My daughter
can't
read the book.
Uh-huh.
She got to page 20 and said, I felt like I was in the room with you, and it was too much.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh,
she
you're
cried
kidding.
And said, I can't. I'm sorry, Mom. I can't read it.
Oh,
even
well,
though
that
she
makes
was
me
the
feel
one.
Happy that, you know, yeah. But I'm glad she tried. Tell her thank you so much. And for her to say that really, really makes me have the goosebumps. That is so sweet. Anyhow, Dawn, I'm just looking at the time. We just, holy moly, we just went so fast. And I know the next group is coming in. The next host is coming in 2 minutes.
Usually, oh, my goodness.
I know. I just closed that out, darn. So I'm going to
have
to do my outro right now. Thank you very much. And if you'll just wait just a couple moments, and I will finish this off and we'll say goodnight. So thank you, Dawn Corbelli, for joining me this evening because we learned so much from you with this informative discussion. I loved all the different things that you brought into the discussion. I think that people can really use it. So you can read Dawn's interview about TBI on my blog on TBI Survivors and Caregivers. She did a survivors interview, and she also, remember I said she has a lot of radio things up there too. So go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com and put in Dawn Corbelli, DawnCorbelli. And while you're there, check out the Brain Injury Resource site and the one that shouts out accomplishments, big and small. It's called Itty Bitty Giant Steps because there is nothing too small that shouldn't be celebrated in the brain injury community. So if you have an accomplishment you'd like to share, please contact me at, again, Donna O'Donnell Figursky at gmail.com. And I shouldn't say again because I never gave that to you today. So Donna O'Donnell, O-D-O-N-N-E-L-L, F-I-G-U-R-S-K-I at gmail.com. There's also a section called for guest bloggers, which gives my readers another perspective from other writers. And don't forget to check out my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. And I'm going to give you another website to check that out, because there's lots of good things, including all the characters that are in the book. So check out Donna Figursky, D-O-N-N-A-S-I-G-U-R-S-K-I .com. Okay? So tune in next Sunday to hear host Lisa Dreyer on Mess with MS. And as the clock is ticking up right now, we have to say goodbye, but please stay tuned to the next show. It's called The Moving Forward Podcast Stories of Triumph, and that's being presented by Coach KJ and Dr. Valentina. And that starts at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So we're going to say goodnight tonight to you tonight. And I will see you in 2 weeks. And Dawn Corbelli, thank you so much. And I want to just give your book one more. Oh, I already closed it out. Give us the title of your book one more time,
A Miracle a Day, One Day at a Time, Hope After Traumatic Brain Injury.
Okay. So there's Dawn's book, too. So you've got two good reading books to do. I've written a review on Dawn, so you can see. I mean, I really enjoyed reading her story, and I'm sure that you will, too. So on that note, I have to say, Dawn, thank you so much for joining me tonight. This was a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Hey, good night, everybody, and have a happy new year. I know I didn't say that. But have a happy new year. And to David, happy brainiversary, your 18th one. Okay, good night, everybody. Bye-bye. See you in 2 weeks.